Time now for Fitzy and Mego with Nick Fitzy Stevens and Megan Ottolini on WEEI.
Like to watch? Just follow WEEI on Twitch.
Hold on a second. Joe Braverman, is this our first time for myself and Megan Ottolini getting a chance to speak to Patriots special teams coordinator Jeremy Springer and you give him Wham as a rejoin song?
This is a vibe.
It is a vibe. It's actually one of my favorites. I always enjoy it. But the very next day. All right. So we have him on the line. Yes, sir?
Yes, we do.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure right now to be joined live on the hotline. Patriots special teams coordinator Jeremy Springer joins Fitzy and Mego filling in for Jones and Keith on a Patriots Friday here on WEEI. Hi, Jeremy. How are you? And how was your Thanksgiving, buddy?
Hey, Fitz. Hey, Megan. I'm doing great. It was a great Thanksgiving. Ate a lot of food. You know, watched a lot of football, and it was good to watch other people stress and not myself, and I felt good to do that. How about you guys?
It was wonderful.
Yeah, Thanksgiving's always a great time, and the holiday season is upon us now. The crush towards Christmas and everything merry and bright has officially begun as well. And it's very funny that you say that you got a chance to kick back and relax for a day before, obviously, a big game on Sunday and watch three football games yesterday and one that now, unfortunately, has led to the dismissal of a head coach in the NFL that should have actually had some special teams implications. We heard a story earlier this morning, Jeremy, that your head coach, Gerard Mayo, actually hopped on the phone with one of the assistants, Evan Rothstein, and talked about how the Bears handled the end of the game yesterday and how they would have handled that and how they would hope to prepare for situations like that. Are you briefed on a lot of those things? And do you guys go over those sort of like urgent and extreme situations? Like, what do we do when there's one timeout, no timeouts? Are we ready to go from 50, 55? Like, take us a little bit behind the scenes on how teams prepare for situations like that, which unfortunately Chicago kind of botched yesterday.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, man. I never like to see that stuff. But, you know, for us, Evan does a phenomenal job in getting us prepared as coaches. And we go through a lot of those situations in training camp. And then once you get into the season, it gets hard to practice every situation because there's so much that can happen in a football game. But every Saturday, us as coordinators and the head coach and Evan, we go through a lot of those situations that went on in the league the previous week. We actually talked through that. It's about an hour-long meeting. And we go through each of those situations, like what would we do in that situation if it came up as a staff, and we collaborate on that. And then on game day, you know, we're on the headsets. And so we're able to know, and Evan does a phenomenal job of, all right, the play before that, he's already letting us know, hey, if he gets sacked here, this is what we're doing. If we can complete, this is what we're doing. So I'm hearing this, and I can get my guys prepared. So, hey, this is a situation. I can talk to my specialist. I can talk to our guys on field goal maybe. Hey, we're not going to call timeout here, so while we're on the field, hey, we're going to run our Mayday operation here, so just be patient. And so there's a lot of collaboration leading up to that play so that whenever that play happens, we're all on the same page, we're all in unison, and no one's freaking out. No one's, you know, pressing the panic button, per se, and we have a good plan in place. But I think the meetings throughout the week, that meeting on Saturday is a very big meeting for us. And then we also have what we had today with our players is a situational meeting. And so our players are informed of like, all right, let's go through the situation that happened last week in the NFL. And so now our players are informed. We'll usually work a couple of those situations in practice the day of, which is today, it just happened right now. And so that we're all on the same page. So I think there's a lot of collaboration throughout the week so that, again, those things happen and you're not caught, you know, making huge critical mistakes that lose you a football game because you're not prepared as a coaching staff.
How do you feel, Jeremy, that those conversations and the kind of conviction and the decisions that you guys as a coaching staff have in those situations has developed over this year? A lot of you guys, you know, developing it in these roles for the first time. How do you feel like it's kind of changed from where you were very early in the season?
Tenfold. I mean, it is what it is, right? You know, you got a first-year head coach. I'm a first-year coordinator in the NFL. You know, first-year guy. So you go through situations early in the season where, like, man, I could have done that better. And there's been situations that I came up early in the season where, man, I didn't really play that the way I should have. And you learn from them. And I think as the season progresses, you just build a kind of a gel with everybody else where you kind of know what to expect because the things have already happened. And it's our job as coaches to not make the same mistake twice. It's plain and simple. And when you make those critical mistakes as coaching staff, put your players in a disadvantage, those are what you know, lose your games and get you fired, to be honest. And I think, you know, like I said, as it progresses, we'll continue to get better and better working together. And does that always equate to wins? Doesn't necessarily mean so, but at least situationally, we understand what to expect and we can be prepared for it.
Patriots special teams coordinator Jeremy Springer joining Fitzy and Mego here on a Patriots Friday on Boston Sports Original, WEEI. Jeremy, there was a, you know, I'll stop short of saying a whole to-do or whatnot made recently, but there was the conversation that was had about Marcus Jones texting Alex Van Pelt and communicating about, you know, wanting to maybe get a play on offense. And he's not only just a very important player on defense as a starting slot cornerback, but also integral to your special teams unit as well. And we've seen Brendan Schooler now jump from special teams to defense as well, playing a spy, playing a blitzer as well. What are those conversations like? Does DeMarcus Covington, you know, shoot you a text or give you a call or approach you on the sideline and say, hey, can I borrow Brendan for like five plays? I think he's going to be the way this team sets up. I think he's going to be great if we can use him situationally. Or how do you guys all coordinate kind of like moving the pieces that are the players around from unit to unit?
Yeah, and when you look at special teams, my goal as a coordinator is for those guys to one day graduate from playing just special teams and playing an offense and defense only role. So for me, it's a blessing to see someone like Schooler, you know, as the special teams ace for us to go play defense. Like, I want him to play defense. If there was one day, 2 years from now, or a year from now, where he was a full-time starting safety, I would be happy because that's, at the end of the day, that's going to prolong his career. That's going to get him paid more in the future. And that's what I want for the guys. Like, at the end of the day, guys, you know, they want to play offensive defense. That's, they grew up playing quarterback. They grew up playing receiver, DB. And I want them to do that. And so for us, it's not even a conversation. It's easy. Like, me and DC, like, hey, we got a package from school. I'm like, hell yeah, let's go. And in school all week, I'm talking to him, like, how do you feel about your package on defense? Or how do you feel about this package, Marcus? And he's like, I'm excited. I'm like, I'm more excited for them. Because, again, to me, special teams is the third phase of the game. We help our offense and defense out. And if those guys can graduate one day, to me, I'm doing my job. I'm developing those guys and showing them that they can play both those, either offense or defense. And that's a credit to us and a credit to that player individually.
Along those same lines, Jeremy, Javon Baker is somebody who has gotten some play on special teams. He obviously has so much dynamic talent. Like, he jumps off the screen when he's out there. What would you like to see from him in terms of his growth by the end of the season, where not just you, but the offensive coaches can also look at him and say, okay, we know where this guy's going to fit in on the team next season going forward?
Yeah, Meg, I love Baker. I think he's unbelievable talented. You can see why he went to Bama early in his career. He's got all the tools. I think for me, as we continue to move forward, we continue to develop him in practice, is us getting him in those situations where he's got to make those decisions. And I just look at return, for instance, because he was a kickoff return for a couple of games. Like, especially out here in the Northeast, and again, Meg, I'm from Texas. I was in California before this. I was in Arizona. So dealing with the wind, the weather, the cold, that football does a lot of funny things when it goes in the air, especially on kickoffs. And for a guy also like Baker, who hasn't returned kicks, you know, number of years, even in his career, it's getting him those reps in practice, getting him to feel comfortable when the ball's on the ground, when the ball is coming short, or it's up in the air and it's starting to curve late. Those are really hard decisions. And for me, I want to make sure that he's prepared so that if he goes out there and makes a mistake and I put him out there too early where he's not ready, well, then people are like, all right, Baker this, Baker that on Twitter, or fans are not happy with him. It's like, well, that's a bad coaching mistake on my end to put a guy that's maybe not ready for those type of situations. And I just got to continue developing in those situations. I think we're doing that right now. And when the time is right, he'll be right. And I see Baker as being a vital tool for us, you know, whether it's, you know, the rest of this year or even moving on to the future. And as he continues to develop, he's going to be a very good player for us on offense too. And I'm excited about him.
See, I love the way that you're talking like this, Jeremy, that, you know, special teams, you are an island and an entity in and of yourself, but also that you can sort of like help, you know, groom and develop and work on some of the finer points for all of these guys so that they can contribute in other parts of the team as well. Like, that to me is what everything that New England Patriots need to be about as you guys continue to try to turn the ship around and begin this rebuild that could take a while as well. And that's an all hands on deck approach that I think a lot of fans that are listening right now are probably very refreshed and reassured to hear. But before we get to longer rebuilds in multiple years and looking too far down the line, you guys have a big game Sunday. It's your last before the bye. Five games remaining on the season. I'm sure you guys are looking for a lot of positive growth. So let's get you out on this. What kind of challenges do the Indianapolis Colts present for you, special teams-wise? There are definitely some real playmakers on that team. They've had some struggles themselves. What are you keyed in on and focused on heading into Sunday?
Man, I'll tell you one thing about the Colts. Brian Mason, the special teams coordinator, and that staff has done a phenomenal job retaining a bunch of players they had last year. A lot of their core guys on special teams, I'm going to talk special teams because that's my job and that's my phase. They are fast. They are physical. They play hard. They make plays. I mean, this unit that we're about to play is one of the better ones, if not the best one we've played all season long. So for my guys, what I'm really looking for is that we 100% mentally and physically, we're prepared to play this game to execute a high level. We protect our specialists. We got to protect Bryce. We will protect Sly. When we get opportunities to punt the ball, kick the ball, we got to make sure we give them room to punt it, room to kick field goals so we get points on the board, flip the field. And at the end of the day, win your role, like win your one-on-one matchup. If I got, 41 or 50 some of the guys on this team, we got to win because they do a phenomenal job. They put guys in the right position, and it's a good – it's going to be a huge test for us on special teams because I feel like if we get – do some right things and execute a high level, we're going to give our offense and defense a chance to win the game. And that's our job on special teams, to give our offense and defense a chance to win the game. And we can't dig ourselves a hole by, getting a block punt or a turnover on special teams or a block field goal. Those things, they kill you as a team. They're critical, and those are things that we can control. And we got to execute a high level, man. It's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a little bit windy. It's going to be kind of cold. Now we're getting to those games now where now the ball's not going to fly as much. So our execution – from top down, whether that you're starting defense linebacker and you're playing three phases or you're playing all four phases like school, your job is to win your role. So I'm looking forward to that on Sunday.
One more for me, Jeremy. Noticed that last week Jack Westover dressed for the game. Do you see any role him potentially on special teams at some point in the season?
Yeah, I mean, he was a damn near four core guy for us this past weekend, and that's kind of how the season rolls, right? He's on practice squad. He's a guy that's developing through the season. And when you have numbers down or injuries, and he's a guy that can contribute on special teams, that's what you want to see, a guy develop into a role that can play on special teams from the practice squad. And then eventually he goes special teams, and then one day he's a tight end playing full-time on offense. And so a guy like that, if he's up, he's going to have a critical role on special teams. And I expect him to execute his job and get one game better.
Absolute pleasure speaking with you today, Jeremy. I know you're from Texas and you've coached out west, A&M, Arizona, obviously the Rams. This will probably be your first full or mostly full New England winter. Get ready. I'm going to tell you right now, like the maritime winds and New England weather around here, it bites different, my man.
Oh man. I'll tell you what, I already reached that practice right now. It was windy outside. And it's 30 degrees or whatever it may be, but man, my hands are frozen. I can barely talk. I'm just trying to get used to it day by day. I'm taking one day at a time. When I got terrible players, one play at a time, I'm taking one day at a time. Now I get ahead of myself.
Can you believe we choose to live here? It's unbelievable.
We pay so much to live here.
We pay so much to live here and freeze and be miserable in the roads. Oh, man, we could go on.
Hey, I'll tell you, from California, it's not much difference in terms of how much it costs out here. It's about the same as it was in L.A.
It's crazy.
It's just saying something. It's crazy, but it's about the same.
Yeah, I know, but they got this crazy thing out there called the sun. It's weird how
the sunset too. Don't forget about that. Sunsets are nice.
That's the best. Patriots special teams coordinator joining Fitzy and Mego on a Patriots Friday. Jeremy, good luck. It was a pleasure speaking with you. Happy holidays and all the best going forward.
Yes, well, have a great one. Okay,
thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you. That was New England Patriots special teams coordinator joining Fitzy and Mego here on a Patriots Friday on WEEI 617-779.
Delightful guy.
I didn't want to go on and on and make it seem like I was the card carrying member of the, or like the new president of the Jeremy Springer fan club. What a delightful human. Great answers, energy, full insight, taking us behind the scenes. And like, I was hoping to get a little insight on like sort of how they go through the preparation and their own like sort of war gaming for different scenarios. I wasn't expecting to get like that nuanced a breakdown. That was great. I learned something. It was a very pleasant 10 minutes and I learned something.
Fitzy, put it on six rings.
Put it on the six. put on the books, or as they like to say, put it on the six rings. Speaking of the six rings, it's time to preview Patriots at Colts. You heard about how good the Colts special teams are from the Patriots coordinator. There are a lot of other things that the Colts do well. They're also having some issues. And there's a very interesting comp, Mego, that I kind of want to get into, because the Colts have someone the Patriots could have had, but they decided not to get in the draft. And we'll see how that lines up as it pertains to a piece that you put out on WEEI.com earlier this week. We'll get to all that when we start to preview Patriots versus Colts. But first, let us catch you up on everything trending in the wide world of sports right now with the one and only Joe Braverman.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending Now is brought to you by Northeastern Savings Bank. The Patriots are back at practice after having the holiday off yesterday. They continue to prepare for a home matchup at Gillette with the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday. You just heard from Jeremy Springer talking with Fitzy and Mega. We heard earlier this morning from head coach Jerod Mayo. He talked about the importance of getting that victory heading into their bye week.
You know, as a player, you're like, man, we better win this game, because that's the difference between, you know, maybe a 4-day break and a 3-day break, or five-day break. So it's definitely important. And again, you know, when you look over the last, you know, it's easy to sit here and focus on the last game, but, you know, the four games prior to that, I thought we were going in the right direction, and, you know, we had a hiccup, and hopefully we can get back on track this week.
Mayo also ruled out offensive lineman Cole Strange for Sunday's game. He would not mention Jabril Peppers, though. The book is still out on him. Well, there we have some ramifications. Officially, Black Friday from the NFL. Matt Eberflus has been fired by the Chicago Bears as head coach. This is the first time ever in the long history of the Chicago Bears that they have fired a head coach midseason. That's all part to the collapse that they had yesterday in Detroit against the Lions, where they lost 23-20. The other games from the Thanksgiving slate, the Cowboys took down the Giants 27-10, and the Packers made easy work of the Miami Dolphins 30-17. Week 13 continues today with a Black Friday matchup between the Raiders and the Chiefs from Kansas City. You can listen to Westwood One's coverage of that game right here on 93.7 WEEI-FM beginning at 2:30. The Bruins are back on the ice as they welcome the Penguins to town. The Bees are currently 3-1 since Joe Sacco took over as head coach. Puck drop in TD Garden is set for 6:30. Meanwhile, the Celtics resume play in the NBA Cup tonight in Chicago against the Bulls. Boston could clinch a spot in the semifinals with a win and an Atlanta loss to Cleveland later today. Tip-off from the Windy City set for 8 o'clock. And rumors were flying yesterday about free agent Juan Soto potentially signing with the Red Sox, but ESPN's baseball insider Jeff Passan says that Soto has not agreed to any contract with any team thus far. Northeastern Savings Bank is the leading alternative to using a big bank for businesses and families in Massachusetts. Upgrade to a local partner. Upgrade to Northeastern Savings Bank. Member FDIC and DIF. I'm Joe Braverman, and that's what's trending on WBEI and WBEI.com.
They always seem to be a step behind. So from a coaching perspective, I don't think they've helped the players get better. And then obviously this isn't a great roster, so I don't know how much better you could get them. But you look at it and go, where have they gotten better? I ask you, where have they gotten better? And aside from the quarterback,
that's it.
Friend of the station, friend of the six rings, Mike Giaddi. Right there talking about a question I think that it's very fair for all of us to ask at this point, Mego. Where have the New England Patriots improved, aside from at the quarterback position, in the 2024 season? One of the things obviously a lot of us thought was that maybe a new coach, new coordinators, new outlook, new attitude would freshen up some of the details, some of those edges and little elements last year that seemed to slip away from Belichick and the coaches in what was a lost season. Unfortunately, I really can't point to any one part of the team. Maybe special, excuse me, having just spoken with Jeremy Springer here on WEEI, you can definitely say that the special teams have improved, but otherwise, receivers, defensive line, there have been injuries galore, secondary as well. Christian Gonzalez has definitely been a marked improvement, but of course, Kyle Duggar's injuries, Jabril Peppers being on the non-football list. Now he may be coming back. I can't point to any other aspect of the team that's improved. Am I missing something?
Well, I feel like in some ways we're all kind of yada yadding past the most important improvement, which is clearly the quarterback. And I know people push back because they say you're not winning right now and the quarterback isn't everything. It's not, but the quarterback is such a huge piece of it. And maybe you just fell into it being lucky to get the guy that you got at 3, who looks like not only has such tremendous football skills and athleticism, but also the right character, the right makeup to be in this situation, to be patient, to develop the way that he's supposed mm-hmm. to, like all of that. I feel like in having that conversation about, okay, most of the rest of the team actually looks worse than it did last year, and last year you were a 4-win team and the coach got fired. It's still such a big piece of the rebuild. It is the biggest, most important piece of the rebuild, other than maybe saying, okay, we got to land the right coach. We have to be in the right head coaching situation. But even with that, I think the quarterback's more important. And I don't know how many people could like argue the other side there. So on the one hand, I look at it and I go, yeah, most of it is weaker. Most of the pieces you have are weaker. It even seems like certain guys like DeMario Douglas, who I thought was... it was realistic that he could have a 1,000 receiving yard season mm-hmm. if Drake May was playing the majority of the games. Like some of these guys, I feel like even in talking to them in the locker room, it's been taking longer for everybody to literally get on the same page when they're on the field than you would have expected. Now, do you put that on coaching, or do you put that on even Kendrick Bourne saying sometimes he's off on his routes that he's running and that's on him? Like, people aren't coaching him to be in the wrong spot or to go too shallow or turn back or anything like that. It's all to say, like, I still think the most important thing is the quarterback, and you can hang your hat on that while saying we got to fix the rest of this.
Well, I think a logical follow-up to that, though, would be, okay, how much of that can you say is just like the Patriots being lucky by just taking the quarterback that fell to them in the draft? Maybe they would have taken Jaden Daniels if Drake May went too.
I think they would have.
I very much think they would have as well, and they probably would be in a similar situation. Obviously, the dynamics and the operation would be different, but they'd be in a good spot. You know, was Elliott Wolf that much smarter than everybody else? I can't necessarily say that. Have they done that much of a better job grooming and developing their quarterback? Potentially. So looking past that, I want to see some of the spots on the team where they're not making mistakes. I want to see a wide receiver develop. I want to see an offensive lineman, accelerate his growth and development and look to be a part of the solution and not the problem going forward. And that's where the Colts come into town this weekend, Mego, is interesting for me. So, obviously, you put together a piece this week at WEEI.com discussing how the Patriots, let me put it this way. For all you Patriots fans out there that keep saying, how come we're the worst at drafting and developing receivers? How come the Patriots, it feels like we suck at this, like we're literally the worst. The answer is yes. The Patriots are actually the worst. Mego painstakingly went back through like the last 11 NFL drafts, looking at receivers that were taken tight, when I say that, pass catchers, tight ends and yes. wide receivers, and the New England Patriots have the worst track record of all 16 teams in the American Football Conference. They're just plain bad at it. And unfortunately, as we all got our hopes up when somebody new to pick receivers. Yes, Elliott Wolf, he's a legacy football guy. This is going to be awesome. He comes in, takes Jalen Polk from the talented trio of receivers with the Washington Huskies last year on their national championship runner-up team, then goes and gets my guy, someone people said could be the new Puka Nacua, and Javon Baker. They were going to weaponize the offense. All they have done is weaponize the people that say the Patriots can't draft wide receivers worth a crap, because neither of them have really broken through. Jalen Polk is in his head, in his feels. He's on social media too much. He's a repeat offender, making mistakes, jumping off sides, dropping balls. Baker has one target, zero catches on the season. You know, they could have had Ladd McConkey. He's been great. Obviously, near 50 catches, could possibly have a 1,000-yard rookie season, which would be amazing. And Sunday, Mego, in comes AD Adonai Mitchell, a receiver drafted between Polk and Baker. I think he was taken in the 50s by the Colts. A lot of people had him as a first-round talent. I know Andy Hart and several other people at the station were over the moon for him. The Colts luck into him later part of the second round. Now, he's not lighting the world on fire. He's got 20 catches for 254 yards, I believe, on the season. No touchdowns yet, but he looks like he has the skills. And you look at the inconsistency that's come from the quarterback play in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Flacco was good for a bit, then faltered again. Anthony Richardson throws a 70-yard dime, then can't complete a 4-yard screen. Mitchell looks like he may be the real deal on a pretty good receiving core too, with Alec Pierce, Josh Downs, Michael Pittman. I wonder if Sunday we're going to get a chance to see, you know, what Mitchell looks like in comp compared to Baker in Polk, and are we going to be going, now that's the guy they should have taken? Or is there a bigger problem at play with developing receivers on the Patriots?
So I can't say for sure whether it's they have a bad picker or if a bad developer. It's probably honestly like a little of both, like most things. It's interesting you bring up Mitchell because it makes me think about going forward, when you're trying to build out this offense through the draft, and it's still clear to me, even though I wrote this whole column basically bitching about how bad they are at drafting weapons, that the most immediate area of need and the thing that will help Drake May the most next year is getting a left tackle, is firming up the offensive line. Like, if you are enjoying the offense of the Detroit Lions, that's where you start. Like, you have to get real in the trenches. And so that's what they had to do first. But when I think about the kind of pass catchers that he needs, like, for who Drake May is, it is crazy to me that the closest thing that he has to a vertical threat, to a deep threat, is Kayshon Boutte, who's somebody who's working really hard, actually, to make himself into a receiver who can be dependable that deep. And I just think, like, you want Javon Baker to develop into that guy. You were probably hoping that Jalen Polk would be kind of like a bigger slot guy, or at least just like a production, a volume receiver, and he hasn't been that yet. My nervousness, Fitzy, and tell me if you are here at all, I worry that they're going to try to draft for a system and not for their quarterback. And I don't know whose system is going to be here next year. I don't know how many different offenses Drake May is going to have to learn and say during the tenure of his rookie contract. But I know it's going to be Drake May. So I want them to just go out and pursue the kind of receivers that are going to elevate his skill set. And that sounds simple, but I think it's something that is really just kind of like at odds with the way that some of these front office guys think, where it's like, okay, we're running this West Coast style offense and it's going to be these short productive passes down the field and these are the kind of guys we're going to have to get. No, look at the kind of quarterback you have. Like, it is crazy to me, Fitzy, just to go off on another tangent real quick, because I asked Alex Van Pelt about this earlier this week and it was the first time he changed his tune a little bit. Like, that we still don't see design runs for Drake May. And I asked him, like, will we see that this season? I know you guys want to protect him, but
that's an odd question.
No,
I didn't think it was very odd, Coach. No.
He answered it very well. He said for the first time there was some movement on it. He said, you know, we'd love to get him in those situations if a game is on the line and it's a really high kind of like it's a determining situation like that in the red zone. That's an area where we could see Drake being in a design run. But first and foremost, we have to protect him so he can play through the rest of the season. And I'm like, yes, but at the same time, like, don't be so married to your concepts and your system that you're looking a gift horse in the mouth with what you have in your quarterback, which is this incredible ability to run and escape and have a feel in the pocket and also the arm.
Yeah, I Mego, if the Patriots were to draft receivers or seek out pass catchers via free agency, the draft combination they're in, whatever, based on a system and not just talent, need, or more importantly, most specifically, as you just mentioned, to the talents of your quarterback, that would be such an absolutely short-sighted, foolish way.
But Fitzy, it's how they did it, right? You have your third down back, you have your little undersized slot receiver who's very speedy,
and
quick direction, change
of
direction guy.
I miss all of them desperately. The guest we had at the stadium a few weeks ago was Kevin Falk in our pregame talk show this coming Sunday in the Cross Insurance Club, in case you happen to be a season ticket holder. And we do these talks before an hour and a half before kickoff. We're going to have Deion Lewis, another one of the long line of Patriots running backs / third down backs that made the offense move. I do not understand why organizationally they have moved away from that. And they don't have one of those guys now, just like they also can't find anyone that can get open, hold the ball on third down, not named Jacoby Myers in the past decade, or establish a legitimate vertical threat. Please, somebody help me make sense of this.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, and look, they're going to keep drafting. They have to hit some point. I think it's smarter to go out in free agency and try to, or via a trade to try to find somebody who you know. Like, you just look at them, their play style, and you know is going to at least fit with what you're trying to do with Drake May. But again, to me, it's about Drake. So you ask, where's the team better? Where's the team improving? Where do they have to focus? Build it around the one thing that you know is solid in your foundation. Jerod Mayo today talks about you have to build a foundation before you can hang the blinds. Well, the only thing that I see across this entire franchise that is a definite for the foundation is Drake. So tailor everything to him, because good job, guys, whether through luck or tremendous scouting and decision-making and development, you have him. So move forward with it. And don't be like so scattershot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I completely do. I understand that everything should be about supporting the best thing that you've done in the draft in years. Everything should be about supporting the best part of this team. Everything should be about making this team. You want to talk about weaponizing the offense and making the Patriots a playoff contender again, because, spoiler alert, they're going to miss the playoffs for the third year in a row. Buffalo's going to clinch the AFC East Sunday night. That's going to be their fifth in a row. Can you believe that?
And Fitzy, going back to, we played a clip from Burt Breer a couple minutes ago, where might have been like at the top of the hour, where he was talking about they're resigned to a multi-year rebuild.
Yeah.
And I just, like, I don't like hearing that.
The one I land on, though, is resigned.
Like, yeah, resigned
makes it seem like that, like they're not excited about it. It's like, oh, I guess we really are in that bad of shape.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, okay, it's actually year one of the new rebuild. Yes, everybody
next
knows
that. Next shot you see of Kraft in the box is him with a little white flag.
I'm somebody who said, oh, okay, like, of course they're not going to pull off what the Texans pulled off when they drafted a rookie quarterback and rookie receiver and were able to be in the playoffs. I never thought that was going to happen with this team this year. But I don't think we should just yada yada pass next year as we sit here in November of 2024 either. Like, that scares me that they're resigned to a multi-year playoff, a multi-year rebuild. Is that to get into the playoffs or to be talking about being an actual contender? Because to me, that's like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. Multi-year. Okay, is that 2 years? Because that multi-year makes me think like three and up.
Yeah, and multi-year would be... Now, obviously, again, everything starts with the quarterback. However, if it's a multi-year rebuild and you know you've got Drake May, who looks like you hit on the most important part of the team, you have that five-year rookie contract, and then if he continues to develop at the rate you've seen him start to develop this year, you could be looking at, what, wasting three of the 5 years as well? I'm not saying that the Patriots would be able to, like, get after the Super Bowl in year two or anything, but... That's costly. Like that comes at a price, having to resign yourself to a 3 to 4 year rebuild. And I think the way that they're thinking about it, Mego, is rebuilding into the form of being a contender, not just being like a functional football team, but rebuilding into being a team that has a shot to compete for a deep playoff run or championship.
Because I heard that and you know, Breer's tight end. So I was like, yeah. Oh no. What do you mean multi? No. And also, just because it's a new rebuild doesn't mean you haven't been rebuilding for 5 years now. That would put you in at least a 7, if not 8 year rebuild. Mm-hmm. That's not a rebuild. That's just a failure at that point.
Let's grab one quick call before the break. Zach is in Maine. Hi, Zach. How are you?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Thank you.
I just wanted to say, I think this team needs to sign T. Higgins in the offseason. I know you guys are saying it starts with the offensive line, but I mean, that's a piece right there that all the fans can look at and go, holy smokes, we're actually doing something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, the offensive line is great, but I mean, I could care less about Booty. Polk, I don't want to say I'm done with, but I mean, the guy's a joke. You know what I mean? And then what's the other guy who's making people in wheelchairs stand up, can't even get on the field? You know, I mean, this offense needs so much help. I don't know how you don't expect to be a decade-long rebuild. I mean, including since when Brady left. You know, I mean, at this point, the team is just an utter failure.
Yeah, Zach, there's a lot of disappointment right now for the way things have gone the last couple of years. Appreciate the call. There is not a lot of confidence in the way that they've gone about free agency and the way the draft panned out. I mean, you need 2 to 3 years to properly evaluate a draft. And right now it's looking like they have They nailed the quarterback. They nailed the most important pick, and they crushed a first rounder. Great.
You do, Fitzy, but and I'm putting you on the spot here because I certainly can't think of it. So is there just a glaring omission that I am
with the rest of this draft?
Here? No, well, no, I'm just saying with a receiver, because of what you've seen through New England over the past decade, can you remember a time when a receiver was highly drafted, came in, was really, really bad their first year, and then all of a sudden turned it around and looked borderline elite going forward?
No, I can't. I can say
I just don't feel like it goes that way, especially with the way that receivers come out of college now. I'm not saying that it won't happen and or that you should be out on Polk or Baker or anybody like that. I'm just saying I can't think of a time when we've seen that, when it's happened.
I'm not giving up on Baker anytime soon.
He's a totally different case than Polk.
And we remember your reaction, Fitzy, when he got drafted.
I most certainly do, Joe, and I want to revisit those feels again sometime soon because I was so excited they got the guy I was most excited to get. And basically, when the Patriots traded out of 34, giving Ladd McConkey to the Chargers, they got Jalen Polk and Javon Baker. And those two combined don't have one quarter of the stats of Ladd McConkey. So that makes not only the draft look bad, but the deal that Elliott Wolf and the rest of the Patriots front office made look bad as well. Look, I Polk, if I had to pick between the two, which of them I think there's a chance may break through and be a contributor to the offense going forward in this resignation of a long-term rebuild, I'm going to go Baker. And he still doesn't even have a catch in the NFL. Yet, I'm kind of trending towards the wrong side of the tracks with Jalen Polk as well, but we'll see. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. More of the preview of Colts at Patriots coming up. We're with you till 2:30, at which point we throw it to Westwood One's coverage of the Black Friday NFL special. Raiders at the Chefs. This is Fitzy and Mego on EEI.
Yeah, I think I'm not too worried about, terms. Obviously, putting the ball in harm's way is a big emphasis for a football team as a quarterback. But I think when you're trying to fight back and try in the game, you're trying to make some plays. Some of them happen, but I do think, back on my statement, I am worried about turning the football over. That's a problem. But at the end of the day, you can't turn the football over, and especially, I think we're losing turnover margin in most of the games, with me back there. So I need something that I need to improve on.
Patriots quarterback Drake May earlier this week discussing a little bit of an issue that he's encountered in his rookie season in the NFL. The turnover issue. We knew coming in when he was drafted third overall that he was a gunslinger, kind of took a devil-may-care attitude towards sometimes trying to live to make another play, live to see another day. Alex Van Pelt, Patriots offensive coordinator, also spoke to that earlier this week and said, Drake was, I believe he said, Mego, something along the lines of he was getting a little too deep in the pocket last Sunday, not being able to make plays and the kind of threw the offense off. But then again, you'd probably be pretty deep in the pocket as well if you had DeMontre Jacobs and Vidarian Lowe and all those penalties. And if you were pressured on 70% of your dropbacks, there's a good chance you'd probably be a little too deep in the pocket as well. But trying to make plays, this could be something that is a Drake May issue that they need to get back on top of as well. It could also be a combination of receivers not getting open, people perhaps not running the right routes and making the right plays, and also just the line collapsing around him. Everyone needs to stop trying to do too much, stick to the details, and he's going to probably have a more risk-averse approach. Maybe that's short passes going forward, Mego. Maybe that's easier plays. Maybe that means more running this Sunday against the Colts. We'll see.
Yeah, for me, this is where I land on Drake and his development with the turnovers and the turnover margin. Like, he's clearly very aware of it. On the plus side, this is who he is in terms of he's a big playmaker. And so the other side of that, as you know from watching the Josh Allen experience over the last several years, is that there's going to be some head-scratching decisions, or at least things that to us as the outsider looks like a head-scratching decision, where when you break it down, and Alex Van Pelt has talked about this, Jerod Mayo has talked about this, what may look like to you as a quarterback mistake is sometimes, well, the receiver wasn't in the right place on that route. They were on two different pages. Or if it looks like it's an error in something like a false start, well, that's not necessarily always on the lineman who jumps. Sometimes it's on the cadence. You know, like there's all these things behind the scenes that we wouldn't be privy to. But the thing that I can look at with Drake, it just as an outsider and feel confident in, is that when he throws that pick, that guy gets back out there and he doesn't give a damn. Like, it is so refreshing. And I don't want to pick on Mac Jones, because I thought Mac got dealt a raw deal here, and I want him to have his career.
Yep.
But when Mac would throw a pick, it was like somebody put his dog down Old Yeller style behind the shed. And that's how it felt for the rest of the game, the rest of the week. He was the epitome of that guy would let a bad day turn into a bad week. And for Drake, it's kind of like you always hear about quarterbacks saying that they need to shake off the mistake and move on, but it looks like it's just very natural for him because it's probably something that he's been dealing with as long as he's been playing football. And so I like that side of it from him. So I look at the turnover stuff, and yeah, it does seem like the last 2 weeks in particular, it's gotten away from him a little bit. And it's just his keeping in mind that this is always going to be a little bit of the DNA of who he is as a gunslinger. And you say you want that, that's the kind of quarterback, this is the ride that it is. And on the other side, that his development is not a straight line. It's not going to be every week he's a little bit better, he's a little bit better, he's a little bit better. The whole team took an enormous step back last week, and he was part of that too, unfortunately.
He was. That's part of the ride. That's part of the experience. That's part of what you sign up for when you take a quarterback in the first round and give him any reps the first year. Maybe the plan still, I mean, there have been more questions about, like, I think Van Pelt was already was asked this past week as well. You know, any regrets on waiting this long? Should you have started him sooner? And he said, no, you know, those are some valuable reps that he got to watch from the sideline, and we had our plan in place. The plan is now firmly in our rear view, if you will, so there's really kind of no need to continue discussing it or elaborating as to how long it could or should have gone. Here we are. He's 7 games in. He's played 6.5 games, missed a half against the Jets. Yeah, it's not a straight line. It's not just a nice, slow, steady uphill. There are going to be peaks. There are going to be valleys. There are going to be ups and downs. That's what happens with a rookie quarterback, period. It's not always going to be like C.J. Stroud last year. C.J. Stroud is having a bit of a bumpy sophomore season because people got tape on him and they've tried to figure him out. And so it's been difficult for him, and he's had to adjust accordingly after breaking through dynamically last year. But he came into the league with an awesome surrounding cast, whereas Drake May has been given, you know, a bit of a dollar store team in a lot of ways.
Right.
And no consistent great stud pass catchers. Mm-hmm. Hunter Henry's excellent. Ramondre's very good. But the line is tragic. They are ranked 30. They are the New England Patriots overall, just to be clear. They started a guard 11 games this year, Michael Jordan. They decided he was bad enough to just flat out, not bench, let go of earlier this week. They are the 32nd ranked overall offensive line in the NFL. They are the dead last in pass protection. That's kind of key to your quarterback being able to run through his progressions, make his reads, and deliver the ball accurately on time and on platform. Yet still, Drake May is in the tops of the league in EPA in performing off platform. My gosh, there are so many things to look forward to with this kid.
And Fitzy, I'll say this, like, so my argument against playing Drake early in the season, because I was somebody who said I want him to sit for, you know, 4 weeks or so, at least until that Miami game, the first Miami game. My argument was I worry that he will revert to his kind of base instincts. You know, he's a big kid who, if you think about like Cam Newton, has probably dominated the field, the court, whatever he's on, unless he's playing against his older brothers. He's dominated that kind of naturally throughout his whole life playing sports. And my worry was he is on such a bad team around him that he would put on his Superman cape, he'd put everything on himself, and he'd force these decisions that are not necessarily going through his progressions, going through the development, seeing the field as he should, because he's just trying to get points for the team. I think we've seen a tiny bit of that at sometimes, but nowhere near the level that I expected. And you even see it in the growth from week to week, where the first couple weeks that he's out there as a starter, he's taken off. He's not having 95 rushing yards, and he's blowing doors because of what he can do with his legs. And then you can see him just a couple weeks ago start to, instead of just looking for the lane to take off and run for a first down, he's looking at that middle section of the field. He's looking for DeMario Douglas. He's looking for Hunter Henry to extend the play when he's got time in the pocket instead of just taking off. And so, like, yeah, I do think that he's going to have some of these instincts of, okay, I put it on me, Josh Allen style. I might force something. I might make the wrong judgment call. I might botch just throwing the ball away and having it be a turnover. All of that is the development process. But I think that he develops and has progressed as, like, his football mind so much better than most of us expected watching him at North Carolina.
Oh, 100%. I think that's one of the things I've actually grown to really like and admire most about Drake May. And that's one of the things I will say, I'll give credit where credit is due. Elliot Wolf said the thing that he most admired and was into about Drake May, and I think Mayo was there for some of these meetings as well, I'm pretty sure he was processing and breaking down his losses at North Carolina, not how he did in victory and what he was so great at. Oh, throwing on the run. Look at those runs. Look at that arm strength. Rather breaking down what he did wrong, why he did it, and how he could learn from it. I bet that's also something Brian Daboll would tell you is what led he and Joe Shane to want to trade the family fortune farm and football team to pry him away from New England. Anyway, all right, so we got a game on Sunday, Mago. The Indianapolis Colts coming in as 2.5-point favorites. They are 5-7 in second place in the AFC South, quarterbacked by the young, talented, and enigmatic unstructured Anthony Richardson. They got a power run game and Jonathan Taylor, some good young wide receivers themselves as well. A defense that you can kind of throw on and run on as well. Defense is hardly their calling card versus the New England Patriots, 3-9 on Sunday, but a single victory at home on the season. The Patriots will be wearing their red Pat the Patriot throwbacks on Sunday. Temperatures in the mid to upper 30s, a brisk one at the razor.
I layer know. Up, Fitzy.
No, I'm going to layer up, mofo. It's going to be a chilly one, to say the least. How do you see this one shaking out, and what do you got for a pick on Sunday, buddy?
Oh, we're going there right now.
I think
for me, the two most important things for the Patriots, if you're self-scouting and you're looking at what are we learning about ourselves, what are we doing with this game on Sunday, is one, like you spoke to, their defense is really weak overall. So it should be a get-right game for Drake May. Now, he hasn't been a disaster the last 2 weeks, but if he can really show out and feel comfortable out there and rediscover that chemistry with his receivers, Kayshon Boutte, Kendrick Bourne, DeMario Douglas in particular, put something together out there that makes the whole offense feel kind of uplifted, I think that goes really far. The other side of it where I'm concerned is, as you said, with Jonathan Taylor, the power running game. Their run defense has been mostly dreadful through the season. The past couple of weeks, they've done okay at times. Mm-hmm. But I think that that will be the biggest test for this team going up against the Colts, is can you not just bend, not break, and then on third down have a stupid flag and break, you know, because that's kind of correct. How their run defense has looked. But can you hold it together enough against them that you can force them to go to Richardson and be a little bit, you know, off script and crazy over there in the way that they usually lose games? And I have less confidence in that side than actually what Drake May can do with the offense against the Colts defense. But I think that's going to be the biggest test on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't see Anthony Richardson being the difference maker or having the game of his life on Sunday as well. I think Drake May is light years beyond the development and progression that he's made. Richardson has got all the physical tools in the world, but just it's going to take so long for them to get it together. I know the spike man, as Gronk calls him, Shane Steichen, is doing everything he can with him. But this is one of those tales of like, ooh, maybe we should have really sat this very raw product down for a while and started a Flacco or a Minshew the whole darn year last year, as opposed to getting this guy in. They've got a long way to go with his development. Jonathan Taylor running as well as he's run in a long time. If the Patriots can't key up on the Colts rushing attack and the run defense is leaky again for them, it's going to set up a million different things for them to do on offense. But if they can shut down Jonathan Taylor, and if Jabril Peppers is back in the game, I know it hasn't been spoken of. It hasn't been confirmed nor denied.
Don't you kind of feel like he's going to be?
Yes. Oh, 100%. If I had to bet, yes.
If I was like, betting, yes.
I forget who it was. I think it was Mass Live that posted earlier this week that the Patriots have done their own internal investigating, and they feel comfortable allowing him back into the locker room, allowing him back on the practice field. If he's meeting with coaches and he's practicing and he's taking meetings and he's in the locker room, there's a very good chance. At that point, you've already sort of said, like, it's okay for you to come back regardless of what happens in January. If this does go to trial, then you're probably going to have, you may as well just play him out there. And if he plays, we all know, as the second best run stopping safety in the NFL in 2023, he's a massive difference maker and part of the spine and the center and core of this defense that's been missing for so much of this year. Barmore's rounding back into shape. This will be his third game back as well. So I think the Patriots will key on Jonathan Taylor. I bet they stop him, and I bet they actually get the win on Sunday. I like the Patriots to win this game. Let's say 23-17.
23-7. I kind of feel like that's where the ranges of all these games are. If the Patriots win, mm-hmm. nobody really reaches 24 points. But I'm going to say again, because I do think the Colts defense is really bad, mm-hmm. that I could see the Patriots winning, but I could see it being more like a 27-24 game. I could see this being the highest scoring game of the Patriots offense this entire season. So really, since November of last year.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what the over-under is in this game as well. Actually, it is a 42.5. So 23-17 would be an under for me. A lot of people on the national. Everyone's picking the Colts. Jeez. Well, then again.
Yeah, probably because they watched the Patriots last week.
Then again, when you.
I kind of get down, it, Fitzy.
The exact same logic, but flipped.
Oh, you mean 31-0 doesn't inspire confidence? Giving up 24 points in the second quarter to the Miami Dolphins, a team last night that Green Bay said cowered in the face of the cold at Lambeau Field. Oh, gee whiz, you think that doesn't inspire confidence? I expect a bounce back week. And yes, I know I'll get all the homer honk calls for it. So sue me. I love my football team, and I'm hoping that now they begin a path to rebuilding, or at least get a win before the bye, so we can at least have a decent vibe around here. It is the holiday season, Mego. 617-779-7937 is the number. When we come back, home stretch of Fitzy and Mego here on a Patriots Friday before we throw it over to Westwood One and their coverage of Raiders at Chiefs. You're listening to Boston Sports Original 93.7 FM WEEI.
How did the ankle hold up?
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It wasn't as bad as I thought it will be. I did have a couple flat tires on some lobs, but I was still able to finish it. And overall, I'm happy with the game, happy with the win. I think with each game, I'm only going to find my rhythm more and more.
All right, home stretch here, Fitzy and Mego. We have covered a little bit of everything today. We got into the Juan Soto sweepstakes, and whether or not we believe the Red Sox are, in fact, definitive players, what it would actually take and why we believe it would make sense. But also, at the same time, if there were an alternative plan, that would make sense as well. You guys called and weighed in on that. We talked a lot about the New England Patriots. We talked about Matt Eberflus being dismissed as head coach of the Chicago Bears. And if Bill Belichick would make sense to be the next coach of the Bears, I think so. Mego also sees it as an opportunity. I think it would be much better than the Jacksonville Jaguars, or they might be football Giants, or the Dallas Cowboys. We previewed Patriots at Colts. All of it is either available on the Six Rings and Football Things podcast feed, the WEEI Midday Show, or, of course, by downloading the Odyssey app and using the rewind feature and listening to the show at your leisure, no matter where you go, any time of the day. And Mego, tonight, of course, we have a humongous, tremendous Celtics game in the NBA Cup out in Chicago. Could you please maybe be the person that can explain to me, like I'm a 5-year-old, exactly how the Emirates Cup, the in-season tournament NBA Cup works out, and what the Celtics need to do tonight to, what is it, win Group C?
Yes, so they're divided into these different groups, and this is the first stage. So now it's being determined basically tonight if you get to move forward or not. And all you really need to know as a Celtics fan, if you're wondering, are they going to move forward or not, is there's two scenarios that you're looking at that could happen. Okay. In scenario A, so aside from you, you're playing the Bulls, Chicago this evening. Mm-hmm. This afternoon, the Cavs and the Hawks are playing. So you're in this group of teams that are all 2-1. If the Cavs beat the Hawks this afternoon, all you have to do is beat the Bulls tonight. So if the Cavs win, all you got to do is win. It doesn't really matter. You just win.
Just win and you're in.
You just beat the Bulls and you advance. But if the Hawks, who you lost to in the first NBA Cup game, beat the Cavs, then it becomes more interesting because that's where the point differential comes into play. And if you remember last year, if you got into any of those NBA Cup games, there was one where Joe Mazzulla early on against the Bulls, I believe it was, threw the starters back into the game in the fourth quarter, even though it was very much looking like a Celtics win, because they needed the points differential to move forward. And it worked, but it was a little bit controversial at the time, because you just don't really look at November, early December NBA games and say, throw the starters back in because you want to run the score up. Some people at the time felt like not only is that just like a bad lesson to send to kids who are watching the game and it's just bad sportsmanship, but it also then endangers perhaps the conditioning, the health, whatever, the legs of your starters. If it's normally something where it's almost becomes like a load management situation, why are you throwing them out there in a November or December game? I still think it's really interesting because, first of all, I'm just curious. I can't see a situation which Joe Mazzulla, outside of playing Kristaps Porzingis, I think he's on probably some kind of restriction no matter what because of coming back from his injury. Yeah. But everybody else, I feel like, is fair game. Maybe Al Horford falls into the Porzingis camp a little bit more, but Joe Mazzulla,
he's still on a, pardon my interruption, he's still on a no back-to-backs, correct?
Right, right. Okay. But I'm just thinking of like, okay, you're going to throw everybody back out there because you need to win by, I don't know, 15 or something like that. And you're in a situation, knowing Joe Mazzulla, he has the mindset of he wants to win this thing. I mean, I think that he has said a couple weeks ago he kind of wishes that the tournament was its own thing, that it wasn't consequential to the 82-game season. And so he'd like to see it more like a European soccer football situation.
Football.
But I like it being in the season. I like it working towards your regular record. I don't really think it means very much aside from the guys at the end of the bench who get a really nice bonus along with everybody else if they win this whole thing or if they even get out to the final rounds in Vegas. But at the same time, I'm like, okay, well, if you're going to go for it, you know, the one thing you can't do is really hedge this thing. You either had to go for it or you had to say, this doesn't really matter to us. We're holding back. We're not going to go for the points differential thing. So it's just an interesting thing to watch tonight. Now, again, if the Cavs beat the Hawks and the Cavs are a much better team than the Hawks, then all you have to do is win. But if you see that that game is going sideways, then you know it's going to be a little bit spicier for you to watch the NBA Cup tonight because you're going to see the Celtics playing a little math game and it's going to get interesting.
Yeah, I that all makes perfect sense, and I yet understand none of it. No, I get how the cup works. I just, whose idea was it at first? Just kind of just slinging this around. Whose idea was it first to start this in-season tournament? Was this an Adam Silver thing?
It's been around for like the last decade at least, where people have been talking about a reason to really up ratings, make people pay attention to the NBA in this area of the calendar that's just completely dominated by football.
Gotcha. Okay. I just want to say, I like watching Celtics games because the team is good and they're entertaining and like it's fun to watch. They score. By the way, I love the game the other night. I remember checking the score. It was like early in the fourth quarter and I think it said like Derek White, 16 points. Jaylen Brown, 19 points. Jason Tatum, 20 points. Kristaps Porzingis, 16 points. And everybody had assists and everybody had rebounds. And I just thought, oh, this is beautiful. This is the distribution. This is the Celtics at their absolute best. Like everybody contributing, having five or six people to always have to worry about, having that many different weapons, different contributing members to the defense, to the offense. Like, I just thought they were awesome the other night. How much were they up at the halftime? Like 30 over the Clippers?
It was crazy. I think they had one of their best quarters ever.
I think it was like 78.
51 40. Points in that second quarter.
It was like a record tying or record.
That should be the game that makes other teams tremble and just go, damn it, I thought the Celtics weren't going to be as good this year. Like, oh no, they may not be as good. They might actually be better if, of course.
Oh, you just forgot a 7'3" tall Latvian guy who changes everything.
I try to remember all the 7'3" Latvians I come across in this life, Joe. Don't you ever think I would overlook a single one of them as well.
So, Fitzy, now that I've explained the Celtics math in our last couple of minutes, can I explain my movie math?
You 100% get the final 5 minutes here of the Fitzy and Mego Black Friday experience.
You're the only person at the station whose movie taste I respect. Because the rest, I know that... Rich Keefe
just got on the phone and he's very mad.
An entire dork podcast, but again, it's called Dork. Like, that's not what the football movies list is about. It's not about the dork movies. It's about the football movies. So how did you feel about my list that I put up on WEI.com a couple days ago?
Okay, spoiler alert. Let me run down for it in case anyone is in the car, maybe out doing yard work, shopping, hasn't had a chance to read Mego's list. You should always check everything she publishes to WEI.com or give her a follow at Megan_Ottolini. Coming in at number 10, The Waterboy. Number 9, The Replacements. Number 8, one of the more controversial picks on here, but I understand why. Silver Linings Playbook. Number 7, We Are Marshall. Number 6, Jerry Maguire. Number 5, Any Given Sunday. Number 4, Remember the Titans. Number 3, The Longest Yard, the original from 1974. Number 2, Rudy. And number 1, Friday Night Lights. Okay. Friday Night Lights, I like the movie. I would have probably put it in my top 10 football movies. Most people like the show much more, obviously, than the movie. I think the movie's underrated. I am not a fan of Rudy. I think that is a wildly overrated film that doesn't resonate with me emotionally. And then I'm one of those annoying guys that when he finds out, like, oh, wait a second, they fudged all these actual details for cinematic and dramatic narrative purposes, I get my feathers up in a bunch. The Longest Yard would be my number one by a country mile. I think it's a spectacular movie.
It's the best
movie.
Football.
It is the best football. It's the best movie. And you just tell me Burt Reynolds football, I'm in. Any Given Sunday, awesome. Remember the Titans, legendary. Jerry Maguire. Was Jerry Maguire one of the ones where people gave you the Die Hard is a Christmas movie, therefore Jerry Maguire is a football movie argument?
I think typically they would, but because Silver Linings is on there, everybody was way more up in arms with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand.
I can see that.
It's like, but it, again, you know, with these lists, we're trying to provoke conversation. And part of it is, what is the definition of a football
movie? Show me the money!
Exactly. So
We Are Marshall is good. It wasn't great. I always thought it was going to be better than it was. Silver Linings Playbook is an awesome movie.
Thank you.
I love that movie. And it's got one of my favorite songs, All Right Okay by the Alabama Shakes is the theme song. It's one of my all-time favorites. And Waterboy is a classic. A couple movies I thought that could have been, everyone's going to have their favorites that they would have liked to have seen in there. I absolutely would have put Wildcats in there, the 1980s Goldie Hawn.
Okay. Wiggy said I had to watch that, so.
It's awesome. Oh, it's hilarious. It's rude. It's obnoxious. I would have probably, and also The Mox. You got to put Varsity Blues in there.
Oh,
I don't want your life.
I don't want your life.
And also, no love for Air Bud Golden Receiver?
I've only seen the original Air Bud. You know, typical
Air Bud's a multi-sport athlete.
Typical basketball writer. Oh, she hasn't even seen the football one.
I think there's the Air Bud for all sports and all occasions as well. I heard that everybody was tearing it apart. It was causing all this controversy. Then I read it and thought, this is not a bad list. This is a good list that fostered debate. Isn't that the point of listicles and rankings just like that?
Absolutely. I invite everyone to make their own list. And
well,
then we'll
on
just
my
have,
list.
We'll have WEI.com and it'll just be full of top 10 lists.
All I can say is on my list of favorite Black Friday show co-hosts, you would be at the top, Miss Megan Ottolini.
Thank
that
you,
three
Fitzy.
And a half hours flew by, buddy.
Really
I enjoyed it thoroughly.
It really did.
She's at Megan_Ottolini. I'm at Fitzy GFY. If you liked today's show, congratulate Joe. If you didn't, then I would blame Braverman. Good work, buddy. Thanks so much for listening to Fitzy and Mego on a Patriots Friday and Black Friday on EEI. We now take you to a commercial break and then Westwood One's coverage of Raiders at Chiefs. Happy holidays, everyone.